Well, as I mentioned, we're coming to the end of our series on miracles in the Old Testament. And this morning, we're looking at this miracle of communication. And this is a trailer. Next week, we go on to start thinking about discipleship. What does that mean to follow Jesus and to live the life that Jesus called his followers to live? We're going to be thinking about that in lots of different ways over the next few months. And looking forward to sharing that with you. But this morning, we're thinking about this question of communication and basing our thoughts on the story that Rachel read to us. And it's a story that you may or may not be familiar with. I don't know how much time you spend in the book of Numbers. It's near the beginning of the Bible, and it tells some of the story of what was happening when God brought his people out of captivity in Egypt after being there for hundreds of years, and as he was taking them on a journey that ended up lasting 40 years, taking them on a journey to the land that he had promised to give them. And this is an event in that journey. I think it's quite a strange story on a number of levels, most particularly the appearance of a talking donkey. Which sounds like the sort of thing you'd expect in Narnia, but not on a small road through the hills and deserts of what we now know as northern Palestine. But it's also, we'll get to that, but it's also a bit confusing to work out whether God wanted Balaam to go on this journey or not. If you were listening carefully to what Rachel was reading, in verse 20, where we started, God appears to Balaam and tells him to go. Since these men have come to summon you, go with them, God says, but do only what I tell you. In verse 21, Balaam goes, which sounds like a good thing. God has said, do this, and Balaam does it. Verse 22, God was very angry when he went. And you think, how does that work? It's as though God said do something, the guy did it, and God gets cross. And it looks a bit it gets even stranger if we went back earlier in the chapter to verse 12, where God starts off by telling Balaam not to go. So God first tells Balaam then to go, not to go, then he tells him to go, then he's angry when he's going. And in some translations, we didn't get it in the translations that we tend to use here, but in some translations, there's an even stronger emphasis as it says that God became angry because Balaam went. Here we're just told that when Balaam was going, God got cross. We're not given an explanation. We're left with a sense of mystery. But there are hints we can draw from as we look throughout the Old Testament. We find a number of cases where people are doing exactly what God had told them to do, but God comes along and confronts them and challenges them. And this seems to be related to how they are going about it. Yeah, God's told them to do this and they're doing it, but there's something slightly wrong with their attitude or what they're thinking or what they're hoping to get out of it. Or maybe to do with their relationship with God, their underlying obedience to God. And it may be that something similar is going on here. That Balaam is doing what God has told him to do, but his heart, his attitude isn't right. And God chooses to confront him over it. A modern day example, maybe would be the Brexit negotiations. It's topical at the moment. When we had a referendum, the British people said, we want to leave the European Union. And so our Prime Minister and her government have the job of doing that, of carrying through the expressed wish of the British people. But as she does that, lots of people get cross with her and criticise her because of the way she's doing it and the fact that she's not doing it in the way that they want them to do. And there are rights and wrongs, I'm sure, all over the place on that one. But Sometimes just doing something isn't enough. It's our attitude, it's the way we approach it that is important. And this episode in the story of Balaam does suggest that even when we're being obedient to God, even when we're doing what we believe he's calling us to do, it's so important that we continually ensure that our hearts and attitudes are right with God and that we're doing what he calls us to do in the right way, in a way that honours him. So that's one thing to think about as we think about this story this morning. But to the main point in our story, the talking donkey. Balaam, as the story develops, comes across this angel that God has sent, but he doesn't know that the angel is there. He doesn't see this angel, but the donkey does. I have no idea how, but the donkey does, and does everything in his power to avoid it. He knows that confronting this angel is not a good thing. So he veers off the road. He tries to squeeze through an opening that isn't big enough. He lies down. He refuses to go forward. It sounds a bit like taking young children for a walk sometime. But this is what this donkey does. And then God does something miraculous and gives the donkey a voice. It speaks to Balaam twice, not explaining his actions, but challenging him on his behaviour and whether he should have been more aware of what was going on. And I don't know about you, but I find a lot of humour in this encounter. Not so much in the fact of the donkey speaking, that was miraculous, but in how Balaam responds in a totally natural way. He doesn't jump off and run away when he hears the donkey speaking to him. He just starts to engage in conversation. I know some of us speak to our sat-nav devices, but if they started to engage in real conversation, as opposed to pre-programmed messages and responses, I think we might want to stop the car, get out, and work out what was going on. It would be unexpected. But for some reason, it seemed quite natural to Balaam that this donkey was talking to him. And so he engages in this short dialogue. And it starts to prepare him for what is going to happen next, as he becomes aware of the presence of the angel and as he enters into that conversation. And that raises an important question for me, and I thought I'd share it with you this morning. If God can communicate through a dumb animal in this way, how much should he be able to say through us, even with all our limitations, if he is working in us? We can come up with many reasons why we're not capable, equipped, prepared, trained to speak with people about God, about God's purposes, about the reality of life. And we read of other people in the Bible, such as Moses, that great leader of God's people, who, when God called him, said, "Actually, I can't speak very well. Is there somebody else who can do this job?" He tried to get out of what God was calling him to do because of a perceived lack of ability to communicate. And we might not be capable or equipped or trained or prepared, but are we willing to allow ourselves to open ourselves to God's power and his spirit and for his voice to speak through us? And this raises a further question. What does what we say and how we say it speak about who we are, about what is important to us, about the God we claim to serve? What is our communication like? And to explore this, we're going to think of three examples or models of communication. And to think about our speech, our communication in that context. Are we allowing God's presence and love and grace to be communicated by what we say? Or are people seeing something very different? Because what we say draws from who we are. Jesus speaks about this in Luke chapter 6. Here, he's using the example of fruit trees to encourage us to think about how we say depends on the sort of people we really are. What we say and how we say it is influenced by who we really are. He says in verse 43 that good trees don't produce bad fruit and bad trees don't produce good fruit. And I expect if we've got any gardeners amongst us, they'd probably agree with that. And in verse 44, he goes on to say, you can't get figs from thorn bushes nor grapes from brambles. The week before last, we had our eldest son, Richard, and his wife, Emma, with us, and their two children, Abby, who's 2 1/4, and Daniel, who's about 10 weeks old. And one of the things we did, we went with them, was we went to a pick-your-own fruit place. And Abby had great fun. Daniel didn't really engage in this too much. But Abby had great fun going along the rows of strawberry and raspberry plants and picking the fruit and putting some of it into the basket. The stains around her mouth afterwards suggested that not everything had ended up in the basket, but that was okay. But she enjoyed going to these strawberry plants and getting strawberries and raspberry plants and getting raspberries. But I expect if she'd come across a banana hanging on one of those bushes, she would have been surprised. Even at her young age, she would probably have thought that something was not as it should be. You don't get bananas on raspberry plants, although she would have enjoyed the banana. But we know that the sort of fruit you get from a tree or plant is determined by the sort of plant it is. And Jesus uses this to make a point about our speech. He says this: the good person, out of the good treasure of the heart, produces good. And the evil person, out of evil treasure, produces evil. For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. If our lives, our hearts, our inner selves are being shaped and informed by good things, if we're allowing God to fill us with an awareness of his love, of his grace, of his goodness, if we are seeking to live lives that are pleasing to him, then this will be shown in what we say and how we say it. If our lives are being shaped by wrong and inappropriate desires, if instead of grace and love there is bitterness and envy and hurt, if we are living our own lives for our own purposes, then this will be shown in what we say and how we say it. What does our communication say about us? About the sort of people we are, the sort of people we're becoming, the place that we're allowing God to have in our lives. And this is not just about the sort of things that we say to each other with our mouths, but it applies to the many different ways we communicate today. Do the emails we send to people communicate grace and love, even when sometimes we need to communicate difficult truth as well? Or do they say something different? Do things we write on social media, those of us who engage with those platforms, really convey the impression we should be giving of what it means to live as people of God? I see things that some Christians write on social media, and I am deeply concerned about the impression it gives of what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. Are the letters we write to people informed by a deep and meaningful relationship with God? Or do they come from a different place? The Lord opened the donkey's mouth, Rachel read to us. Are we aware of the presence and guiding of God when we speak, when we type, when we write, when we text, whatever it is that we're doing? So that's one question. What does what we say tell people about the sort of people that we are? And are we happy with that? Once, on another occasion, Jesus was at a festival in Jerusalem, and it was teaching the people around him. A crowd had gathered, and he was talking to them and sharing something of God's purposes with them. There was something special, something attractive, something powerful in what he was saying. And people started to ask how such an uneducated person could speak in such a knowledgeable way. And here they're recognizing that Jesus didn't go through the normal educational process for somebody to become a recognized teacher, but he grew up as a carpenter, a builder, a craftsman. But they recognized there was something unique in what he was saying. And Jesus explains to them where this insight and ability came from. He says, "My teaching is not my own. It comes from the one who sent me." And here, Jesus, even though he was God's only son, recognized that he was depending on God for what he was saying. And he goes on to outline two different motives for speech, reasons why people say things. Whoever speaks on their own does so to gain personal glory. But he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is a man of truth. Jesus here is questioning our motives for speaking. Are we speaking so that people will recognize how wonderful and talented we are? Or are we speaking so that God will be glorified? Just over a week ago, I got into a fascinating conversation with somebody I'd never met before and may well never meet again. He was somebody who was part of another church. And for about 20 minutes, we had a wide-ranging discussion about church life, about our understanding of the Bible, about our relationship with God. It was interesting and enjoyable. Well, I thought so. I hope the other person did as well. But as I was thinking about that conversation afterwards, I was challenged by thinking about how much in what I was saying was I trying to impress with my deep insight and understanding? Or how much was I trying to reveal something of God's nature and glory? Because that's the thing that's important. Whatever insights I might have are insignificant compared to communicating something of the nature and the reality of God. It wasn't something I was thinking about at the time. Looking back, I don't know what was actually motivating what I was saying. But as soon as I start speaking God's truth so that I look better, I've lost the plot. It should never be about us or people's impression of us, but it should be about the God we refer to as Father, about the Jesus who deserves to be glorified. When we speak to others about God, when we speak to others about Jesus, when we speak about the work of the Spirit in our lives, and I hope and pray that we do, what are we hoping to achieve? Are we trying to lift up the name of Jesus? Or are we trying to glorify ourselves? What is our motive for saying what we say? And the last model for communication I want us to think about this morning is how our speech is guided. The Apostle Paul, one of the early leaders in the church, once explained what guided his speech. And he says this, when he writes to a church at Corinth, "This is what we speak, not in words taught us by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit, explaining spiritual realities with Spirit-taught words." And if we work through the New Testament, we see many examples of his powerful preaching and the letters and that he wrote and the wisdom that we find there. And here he's explaining what he's trying to do. It starts with learning, being taught by the Spirit. And it goes on to speaking truth, explaining reality based on the teaching he had received. We live in a world where people are desperate for truth, for meaning, to understand what is going on around them. Often they don't recognize it. But people need something to have confidence in. And we are people, if we're following Jesus, we are people who have the privilege of following the one who claimed to be the truth, who said that he would send God's Spirit to guide us into truth. We've been given this precious, precious gift. Are we prepared to receive it, to unwrap it, to wrestle with it, to seek to understand it, and then to share it with others? Or do we make up our own ideas and present our own thoughts and hope they are good enough? The problem with that is that however wise and insightful we think our views and opinions are, they fall short of what people really need to hear. Everyone these days is expected to have an opinion and to be able to share it. And sometimes, particularly on online discussions that I see on the internet, people either finish what they're going to say or start what they're saying by saying, "This is my personal opinion." And this often seems to be intended to give it some standing and to say, this is something that nobody can argue with because everyone's opinion is valid and needs to be respected. And the fact that that's mine says, you've got to accept it. You might not, maybe you might not agree with it, but you can't tell me I'm wrong to have that opinion. But in the final analysis, my opinion, your opinion, somebody else's opinion does not matter. It's God's opinion that counts. And we have the responsibility of seeking to understand his truth, to know what he has communicated through the Bible, through Jesus, through his Spirit, to understand what he is saying and to share that with people who so desperately need to hear it and receive it for themselves. It involves work. God just doesn't give us this truth on a plate that we can pick up and take and distribute to people. We need to grapple with it, try and understand what he's saying. Try and work out how to apply it into different contexts of life. But that's what we are called to do as the Spirit guides us and explains how God's truth affects the reality of the world that we live in. Are we prepared to do that work? Three questions to think about. As we think about the miracle of communication, from God causing a dumb animal to speak, to giving us words to say about him, think about these things. Who do we speak about? What do our words say? And do we speak to bless? When we speak, what is the topic of our conversation? I know there are many, many things we need to talk about. There is the practicalities of life, the way in which we need to engage with other people, the questions we need to ask them, the things that we need to do, the things that we need to agree, the things that we need to arrange. All of those are important. But when we're speaking about deep, significant things, things that matter, do we speak about ourselves? Do we speak about our views? Do we speak about our opinions? Or do we speak about Jesus, the one who came to demonstrate God's love, the one who came to show what it means to live in relationship with God, the one who came to bring all truth? When we speak, what do people hear? Who are they pointed to? And what is what we say, even in those maybe relatively insignificant routine conversations, the engagement we have with people next door, the engagement we have with people at the school gates, the engagement we have with people when we're queuing up in the supermarket, the engagement we have with people on a bus. What does that say? What does our communication say about the one we claim to follow? If I am a follower of Jesus and these are the sort of things that I am saying, what impression do people have about Jesus? Is it a good one or not? It's a question to think about. And in our speech, what is our motives? What guides us? Do we try to tear people down? Do we see our role as to criticise and to point out people's error? Or do we have that desire to bless and build up and encourage and help people to grow into who they are intended to be, help people to grow into a deeper relationship with God, help people to grow into the fullness of the life that Jesus came to bring. This week, who are you going to speak about? What are your words going to say about him? And are you going to be motivated with a desire to bless?